Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Royal here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are travelling through space and time in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it was with a sense of euphoria that we left the Amex on Saturday, and the overriding feeling was that maybe, just maybe, we have witnessed the start of something special. A brace for Aaron Connolly on his first Premier League start, and another goal for Neil Morpay saw off a lacklustre Spurs side. Obviously, the mainstream narrative was about how bad Spurs were, but for once, they did give us, and particularly Connolly, an awful lot of credit. With the international break, there's no game for the boys this week, but the girls are in action with West Ham visiting Crawley on Sunday. Alan Wears is still ill, so again, I've had to look to the bench, and I've got the lad himself and Hancock's. It's Lord Treason. It's Mark Brailsford, and of course, Marcus Hancock's. Hello, boys, how are
we? Hello.
Hi, AD.
Lovely to have you back in here, and have you actually come down from last week yet?
Well, it depends how many beers you've had tonight. Tomorrow even, so, it's afterwards, not about you, but I celebrated.
Well, these early kickoffs, it kind of, actually, I mean, let's talk about that, because, okay. I mean, with these early kickoffs, usually the atmosphere can be a little bit flat, people haven't had a chance to go to the pub or whatever, but this time round, there was just something in the air. Everyone seemed to be quite relaxed. Everyone was in the mood for it.
And, well, Spurs were ripe for the plucking in some respects because of that terrible result they had against Bayern Munich. But they can come back and bite you, can't they? Because sometimes they just want to prove a point. But clearly Spurs just didn't look like they were at the races.
Yeah.
I mean, there was that thing, Marcus, about the backlash. Were you fearing one?
Yes, obviously, because let's be honest, We Are Brighton did a very good article on it about Brighton gifting points to teams on really awful runs. I mean, you've got West Brom and Fulham of the recent seasons, but it goes back further than that. There's like teams like Wigan, Blackpool, teams that couldn't buy a win home or away. We rock up and, you know, before you know it, they walk away with all 3 points. And
if we are benevolent, so, is the word you're looking for.
Yes, exactly. You know, we are the gift that keeps on giving for teams on particularly bad runs, of which Spurs were, because they hadn't won away from home since February. I mean, I know there's pre-season in that, but there was all sorts of stats flying around, and I just felt that, yeah, again, you know, Spurs would be walking away with all 3 points. Of course, I'm delighted that they didn't.
And let's have a quick look at the team then, because I mean it was. Were you surprised to see Aaron Connolly in the starting lineup?
Surprised and delighted. I was, you know, to have one and a half up front was a delight, you know. And I was not being sizes, but I love seeing Aaron Connolly in the team, and it makes sense now. What in it? We know Florin Andone's the attitude thing went wrong, but clearly Potter's really doing a great job. He's managing the team. He's bringing through the youngsters, which is one of the reasons they appointed him. And this youngster has shown all the promise in the under-23s that came to fruition on that day that proves how well Potter's managing as well.
And there's a certain arrogance about him as well, Marcus, because he did have the option of going out on loan, and he came up to Potter and said, no, I don't want to go on loan.
Yeah, that article Graham Potter said about the fact that Aaron Connolly was sort of, you know, chomping at a bit and kept reminding him that, you know, he wants to play in the first team. I mean, that was brilliant. That was probably one of the reasons why, because obviously, you know, it goes back to the old adage, the manager sees the players in training every day, so whilst we see them and think, why the hell are they in the team, because, you know, we don't feel they're good enough, but obviously they've applied themselves well in training sometimes, which is why they're in the first team. Obviously that is a reason for shipping out Lacardia and Andone, because he would have seen him in training and thought, actually, you know what, this kid is probably better than those two put together. Maybe I mean it's early days, but crikey.
That was a question I had a little bit later on, but I mean let's address that now. I mean, Mark, I mean, there was a lot of concern. I mean, I know, I mean, Marcus in particular has gone very much on record as saying that he's not a big fan of Jurgen Lacardia.
He's not the only one, AD. He's not the only one. But, I mean, a lot of us thought the same thing.
But I mean, but with Andone, you did like.
To be fair, I mean, but then he had carried a lot of credit for that wonder goal against the Palace, and he'll always be remembered for that wonder goal against the Palace. So, you know, but at the same time, it seems to me, I mean, when Alan Shearer did that little sort of thing on Aaron Connolly on Match of the Day. And if you didn't see it, do, because he's waxing lyrical about calling him the complete centre forward. But he's obviously, Aaron Connolly's got what Andoni should have done, which is channel his aggression in the right way, because there was a little snippet where Alan Shearer said he didn't win the tackle, so he went in, you know, have some of that, complete centre forward. Yeah, you know, at Florian Andoni probably would have flew in two-footed and taken the player out, and that would have been him off again. Whereas Aaron Connolly, obviously, he's got something about him for sure, but he's also a bit like Ashley Barnes. He's going to be a little, you know,
terrier,
so and so. So, you know, and it's probably what you need.
It is, isn't it? It is what they need. And that's why Shearer probably pointed it out, because there was something of the mongrel about him, as the Aussies say, you know. And that lovely bit when Connolly scores that goal, remember, I don't know if you saw it, when he went down to where the Spurs fans were and cupped his ears.
Yeah,
and
I remember thinking,
steady on, lad. But what, you just love the impishness and the attitude, right? It was great.
And you probably need a bit of swagger, you know, and to carry yourself off. And at that age as well, it's incredible.
19. Yeah, that is amazing. Okay, well, we'll talk about his goals and his performance shortly. But, I mean, it was... I'll just go through the rest of the team here. So, it was a first start for Aaron Connolly. It was a home debut for Stephen Alzate, and he didn't get booked, which is for diving, which was nice.
Well, he's learned his lesson. That's good.
Davey Prepper still not fit, but Solly March did return on the bench. Now, the formation in this one, it's a bit... people were saying 4-4-2. It wasn't a 4-4-2. It was a 4-2-2-2.
We had
two number 10s on the pitch, and I got someone listening to this show, hello,
nice you both join us.
I know. Hello listener, and said I was a bit harsh on Aaron Moy in last week's show, and I think that was fair enough.
I think it was absolutely spot on.
Well, he must have heard you, because he played a blinder.
But yeah, so exactly. I mean, I gave Moy man of the match on Saturday, and he's taken a while to settle, isn't he? But if he can carry on doing that,
he looked great.
Is Davey Prepper going to get back in the team?
Oh, that's a good question. The trouble is, it's too early to tell for Moy. He's had a couple of cameo appearances. At Chelsea, you're right, I was there, and he was awful. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the whole team had a bad day, but, you know, he was definitely bottom of the pile of the bad day players. But he was outstanding against Spurs. I mean, I think he did literally cover every blade of grass in that game, quite frankly. Will Prepper get in? If Moy carries on like that, no. But if Moy has a game like he did against Chelsea, you know, then yes.
but Mark, I mean, Potter has shown that he is a very much horses for courses type of manager. So, yeah. At some point, we'll probably see Moy, Stevens and Prepper.
Yeah, I think you're right. Bearing in mind, of course, in some games, we've seen three or four different formations just in one game. So what's brilliant is it seems to be working, and he's coaching players in a progressive way and teaching them to be adaptable, and that's what's being rewarded. And you look at that team against Spurs, and they were playing for that system and playing for him as well as each other, and I thought that was just lovely to watch. And we've seen it coming, and I don't know about you, about Chelsea games, I was there too, and I just felt, oh no, maybe it's this one, but it was coming, I think, and he just nailed the tactics. And he obviously watched them in the midweek and worked out what to do.
I mean, that's exactly it, Marcus. I mean, it's been glimmers of it in his performances, and there has been an element of bad luck. I mean, think back to the game at Newcastle.
Oh,
71% of possession, and Aaron Connolly being millimetres away from getting his first goal.
I mean, it's
there.
A shame there is goal line technology, because on another day that may very well have been given, were it not for goal line, because we were half a football away from winning that game.
And again, the performances at home to West Ham and against Burnley, where we should have come away with wins in those games. So, I mean, it's almost been there, but it just felt like something just like clicked.
Yeah, I agree. And clicked with, you know, players that probably, if it weren't for injuries, maybe not starting straight away, like your Alzatis and Connolly's. You know, people would have been first choice, like Trossard, like Prepper, like Solly March, you know. Bernardo's another one who seemed to sort of feature on the bench, and now he's not featuring on the bench.
Bernardo's injured at the moment.
Fair enough.
Andy Naylor did a wonderful interview with him in The Athletic this week, where he said, oh yeah, I was playing in Germany and I was in the Europa League semi-finals and challenging for the league over there, and I went home to Brazil in the summer and no one knew who I was. I go back now, oh, you're Bernardo from Brighton.
Oh, that's great.
And it's like, he's amazed by that, because it's like, you know, internationally, we are on
a profile,
stage.
Yeah.
So, It's which is great. Mark, the question I was going to ask you was, it was Stephen Alzati's third start in a row. What have you made of it?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned him, because I was just going to say, can I talk about Alzate? So well done, because that is, for me, one of the key parts of how Potter's progressive style of play is coming good, because there's a young player who's obviously got a lot about him. His close control ball skills are fantastic, and he's obviously got to learn that, you know, he has now two bookings for diving, he knows not to do that, but he looks one of those players who is made for this possession based tight, you know, corner passes around this midfield player that we've been crying out for. And then you put Trossard in that team now, I don't know who you'd put out of the team for that, and my God, I'll tell you what, there'll be a team on the end of a hiding the way we could go. There'll be a team one day we might meet, and we might just put quite a few past them if they play like that.
We nearly did on Saturday.
Well, yeah.
We'll come back to we'll come back to Trossard in a bit, but Marcus, it was there was just something about him, it was freaking me out a little bit. He's like a shapeshifter.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. Yeah, he's
ghosting through players.
Yes, he does.
How did he get round?
I think it's because I don't know, we've watched enough professional football, but, you know, we're just amateurs when it comes to, you know, knowing the game. But I think there is a part of me that thinks that possibly he hasn't been, let's say, on people's radar. I mean, Connolly will now be on everybody's radar because he scored two against Spurs. So every defender in the land's going to be watching him, kicking him, doing all the stuff. Alzati is probably, you know, he's come along by surprise, as you say, ghosting past players. But, you know, they're not stupid. They'll be looking out for him now. If they weren't looking out for him before, they certainly will be now. After Saturday's game.
It was a brilliant weekend for him as well. He just signed a new 4-year deal.
That's good. Yeah,
obviously we're protecting our investment.
Yes, how wise.
Well done, Paul.
Good move.
What you say about
that? But he also he also got called up for the Columbia under-23s, which is great for a lad from London.
Well, actually, that's a pretty decent international team you're talking about there. And with a lot of technically good players. So that can only be good, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, let's just look at the game in a little bit more detail then. And there was obviously, after the first goal, there was a bit of a delay. Can anyone, tell me exactly what Lloris was trying to achieve?
Not look too embarrassed by getting a bad injury. As Danny Baker tweeted on the day, he said, yeah, if I'd made that clangor, I'd make it look good too. That's what he said.
I have no idea. I mean, he obviously tried to catch the ball and didn't. I don't know.
Was it a cross or was it a shot?
Oh, it was definitely a cross when he looked. I think it was definitely a cross from there.
It was going in.
But I don't think. Okay. But I think he was definitely trying to catch it, but obviously he didn't. Yeah.
Well, he got caught between two minds, didn't he? He should have punched it or tipped it. And then he went, I could catch it. Oh.
Yeah.
I suspect he was probably told, we're dangerous from set pieces, don't give away any set pieces. So I was thinking, do I just tip it over?
Mixed messaging.
He probably got his wires crossed in his head.
I think it was a shot. I think they went for it. Because bear in mind that one of the problems recently is that the players don't shoot enough.
Yep.
And it looks as if the Potter go, right, come on, start shooting more. And it looked to me like he looked up and went, you know what, I'm going for this.
Okay. Well,
I might be wrong. Yeah. But and I think that was what set the tone. It obviously set the goal up. Yeah. But
and obviously, 2 minutes in, 1-0 up. There has been talk in the mainstream about the Spurs players saw their mate go down and break his arm and they were shell shocked by it. But they were all on the other. No one was anywhere. They were all on the halfway line just having a chat. The only one that was over there was Sissoko.
Yeah, they probably read Danny Baker's tweet. Yeah, he made it look good.
But let's talk. I mean, a great goal for Neil Maupay. I mean, it was there.
Which is what you want your strikers to be, you know. He didn't show any sympathy. It's like, thank you very much.
Yeah.
If he'd have missed that, he'd be the next one out.
No need for VAR. On that one.
But
moving on. Penalty shout. Connolly pushed to the floor by Sissoko.
I thought it was 50-50.
Yeah, same here. I'm
Potter wanted it.
Yeah. But, you know, I bet you did as well, Aidy.
And Paul Barber's come out in the press this week. There was an interview with him, and he said he's actually leading the calls for the people to let them show the VAR decisions in the ground.
They should, absolutely should.
Because, I mean, this is the whole thing. He said the paying public are not seeing it, someone watching it for free at home on a Moody stream.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it is. Although, to be fair, VAR wasn't as intrusive as it has been in the last few games, so...
No, it did stop me celebrating that first goal, though. I was halfway through it, and I was going, hang on, something's gone on. Yeah, I did. I thought, here we go, and I didn't celebrate properly.
Yeah, I can see why, exactly.
I was about to get my phone out to find out what happened again.
There was a cross from Dan Byrne. He crossed into the box, and Aaron Connolly attempts an audacious finish, which Cazeniga parries straight back into the path of the Irishman, who taps home his first Premier League goal on his first start. And let's talk about that first attempt. That little reverse. How would you call that? I mean, Marcus, you do martial arts, is that
what? Well, yeah, but that was just an instinct. That was obviously just a striker's instinct to stick a leg out. You know, you see the ball coming across, and you just think, right, I need to get something on it. So he just used whatever part of his anatomy, I guess, which, you know, happened to be his foot, to try and, you know, divert it towards the goal, just as, you know, I guess. I don't know, I'm not a striker. So, and then, of course, the minute the keeper saved it, he's already on his toes, ready for the rebound. I mean, that was brilliant. That was
I mean, Mark, there was a huge outpouring of joy for this goal. Now, I mean, scoring a goal was always good, but you know, every time he's come on the pitch, you can always feel the crowd willing him to score. Just come on, Aaron, and it was, you know, it was the feeling similar to, I don't know, Bobby's first goal there on his comeback against Bristol City.
Oh, yeah.
It was, you know, everyone was just so delighted for Aaron. And
I agree.
Just, the place was just buzzing.
Well, I think, going back to what you said about the touch, I think that was a clever little attempt to go. I think he meant that.
Yeah,
I think,
he did. Oh, he definitely meant it.
And it was brilliant.
But it was an instinctive.
Yeah, you're right, it's instinctive.
Of,
yeah.
It was like, right, you know, I'm nearly, you know, if I can get something on that, who knows? It might, you know.
And that's what excites
people
us.
Like Lacardia probably would have just stood there. You know what I mean?
I agree.
That's the difference between like Lacardia and someone like Aaron, who will try and, you know, get something on it, even if it's just a toenail, you know.
It's
just,
exactly.
It was instinctive,
yes,
wasn't it?
Exactly. Which is what we've been crying out for, isn't it, up front? Yeah. Someone who's just going to go for it. And, it's lovely to watch.
Well, the one thing that is of interest at the moment, I mean, I'm including Trossard as a striker, as he was playing up front in this, but all the goals this season have come from strikers. So no one, nothing from midfield, nothing from the
Well, is Trossard a midfielder or a striker?
Yeah. Well, he was playing alongside. He was playing up front with Morpai, wasn't he?
Well, it looked to me like he was playing the 10 and playing off him. Maybe that's the link player that I've always said that we needed. I always thought we didn't have that box to box type player who was going to be the offensive midfielder who was going to make the runs beyond the strikers and has the skill then to also do something with it when he's there. And that's, I think that's why they signed Trossard. And he's my favourite player. Trossard, I think he's a fantastic. We've missed him in those other games.
We have prior to this game, but he's got a job on his hands to get back into the team. But he will.
He will. Yeah, I think he will.
It was, but yeah, only the strikers have scored so far this season. Now I know that you're not necessarily.
That's a bit different to previous seasons.
There is one particular set piece routine that we've seen a couple of times this season. It's a corner routine that sees the ball played to the apex of the box, where Dale Stevens has been attempting a volley. Now, one of those is going to go in the top corner at some point.
Yeah,
but this one, it was particularly noteworthy because he completely pole-axed one of the Spurs players.
He did. I was telling, I think it was Wilkin at the time, though. I've only seen that for a Brighton player work once, and it was at the Goldstone back in the mid-90s when Dean Wilkin scored in that exact way from, you know, someone... played the corner to Dean Wilkins. He smashed it. It was against Colchester United in a League Cup match in the midnight. That's the only time I've ever seen it work. I like the imagination, but I think it's the Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard approach. You have enough shots and eventually one of them go in.
Obviously,
but it's, you know.
We've got to, I mean, Spurs were particularly lackluster in this game, and they are on the brink of... it's not a crisis, is it? But it's... at that end of the league, I suppose, the knives are out a little bit. But, I mean, we wanted it more than them is what I was trying to say. And we were snapping into tackles. We were winning the second balls. And, I mean, we all love a stat, but, I mean, this is one that doesn't normally stick out for me, but this time it does, is the fact that we ran 7K more than Spurs during that game.
That says it all. It does, because I think they had that thing on Match of the Day, didn't they? But they said that, you know, where Spurs' work rate over the seasons has started to decline.
They did, you're right.
And I think, you know, because in sort of like seven of the 11 that started 4 or 5 years ago are still there, whereas obviously Liverpool have sort of evolved and, you know, to the team they are now. But yeah, we did want it more. There's no question. Maybe Spurs are a little bit arrogant and thought, well, you know, teams like Brighton, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
So, I mean,
but who cares? Who cares about Tottenham?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to go through all the chances on this one, but there was a great team move that Colony nearly got one in another one in the second, in the first half. But let's talk about his second, because I mean, it was. It starts with Matty Ryan, goes to Lewis Dunk, and it ends up in the back of the net.
Great ball. And also, I went to the England game, the Kosovo game. I looked at Keane playing for England. How is Dunk not in that England team, or squad at least? With that ball, that pass, brilliant. And, he played a wonderful game. Anyway, you're right. It was a fantastic pass, and Connolly's skill and the intent, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going for the goal, going for this. And because, like Shearer said, he was two-footed, the defender didn't know whether to commit right or left. So you could see him going, which way is he going to go? He went that way last time. And then that's what bought him the space for the shot. And Connolly knew exactly what he was doing.
I mean, Barney Rone in The Guardian described Odawawa in this game as a decommissioned council combine harvester. Which was just
That's fair.
Which was absolutely genius. But okay, what a weekend though for Aaron Connolly. So it's your first Premier League start, first Premier League goal, swiftly followed by your second, and then to top off your weekend. Here's your first senior cap. Here we go. Off you go. Brilliant.
But he set up a wonderful goal for the Republic when he came on as a sub in that friendly, didn't he?
Yeah, that was for the 21s.
Oh, was it the 21s? All right.
He's been promoted to the
happy days
senior squad,
which is amazing.
Yeah.
And he's likely to be involved as well. I mean, they haven't got an awful lot else, and you know, it's exciting. It's an exciting time for him.
And he's ours.
Okay.
I mean, before we move on, we've got to talk. I mean, Spurs did have chance in this game, and Matty Ryan did make some fabulous saves.
He did, and I hadn't quite bought into this early season. Matty Ryan hasn't made a save. There are some things doing the rounds on various social media that, you know, even in like the Watford game and a couple of others, where Matty Ryan hasn't actually saved anything. Everybody time people have had a shot, it's gone in, and which was rubbish anyway. And I hate that sort of talk. But yes, he had an excellent game against Spurs, especially when they rallied, when they were kind of 3-0 down, but they did have a little spell towards the endish of the game. I think when Lucas Moura came on, they then started to look dangerous.
Well, both his eye-catching saves came from Moura. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, it was only him and Son who actually like bothered a leg for Spurs.
Mm. Well, there was that moment when Kane suddenly was looking dangerous, and he skied it. Yeah, I laughed at that one. But the thing about the goalkeeping there is, you're right about that, because Matt Ryan has made some great saves, and in that game,
man
Potter,
of the match at Chelsea.
Well, there you go. And Potter was interesting because he went over to him. I think either at one point you could see he made a point of going to Ryan to congratulate, because he knew that one of those saves was a very crucial save at a crucial part of the game.
Yeah.
So I think he's appreciated by his coach and certainly by us. I love him. He's brilliant.
I do.
And he
well.
Hates Palace.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's not to love?
Okay. So, I mean, are we all agreeing that Aaron Moy was man of the match?
I would say he is. I know Aaron Connolly got it, but I mean, Moy was outstanding for me. I would have given him man of the match. Yeah.
I'll go with that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packen, and I'm here with Mark Brailsford and Marcus Hancock. And they both note that this show is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And I have another shirt of the week for you this week. We've had some interesting ones, a couple of them I've really loved. One last week, which is a complete minger. And this shirt of the week, I'm just going to pass this over to Marcus and to Mark to have a look and describe that particular jersey for your oral pleasure.
I don't know. It looks like it's kind of like a lava type, a lava
it's
lamp.
Like a lava lamp.
Light
exactly
type
it
pattern. But
well,
it's kind polite. Of in the sort of Roma red, I guess, and a sort of amber sort of honey colour, but yeah, it's
well, it looks like he's met a bunch of blokes on the night out and they've had a curry or a kebab,
and it's
ended up coming out the wrong end all over the shirt.
Yeah, it's but I think it's he's right. It looks to me it does look like a lava lampish.
Who makes the kit?
Jacko.
Jaco, yeah.
Or Jaco.
Is there any idea who that might possibly
well,
be?
Well, the sponsor's name seems to be Poctex, which looks vaguely East European.
Mm. And I think with the badge as well, it looks
or is it Portuguese?
Sort of. It looks, that looks sort of Eastern European to me.
Oh, I have no idea, but I'm going to guess.
Okay.
I'm going to say Macedonian.
It does look like a Macedonian international shirt, actually, but it's not, actually.
Dynamo Kiev.
It's not, really. But you are in the right neck of the woods there, Marcus. So, and this is what Phil Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com has to say about this particular shirt of the week. He says, here's your shirt of the week. There you go. That's all we need to say. this is the 2016-17 home shirt of Russian Premier League side Arsenal Tula. They have several nicknames, including the Cannoneers and the Ginger Cakes.
Like you do.
Yeah. They were formed in 1946, and their home ground is a 19,241 capacity Arsenal Stadium, which is in the city of Tula, which is 150 miles or so south of Moscow. Or, if you prefer, it's an 1,847-mile drive from Brighton.
Brilliant.
So it doesn't take you 24 hours to get there, then.
Yeah, shall we start now? They finished sixth in the league last season, which meant they entered this season's Europa League second qualifying round. It's not been a complete success, as they lost both home and away games to Azerbaijani side Nefti Pekashar. After much searching and despite their name, it has become apparent that there isn't a lot to link the UK with the Arsenal Tula. Jan Musha kept the bench warm for two seasons as a young, unused sub, but while Tim Harrow kept goal for Everton, Musha made a handful of league and cup appearances during time at Goodison. Emmanuel Frimpong was an Arsenal player between 2011 to 2014, and he only made six Premier League. He went on loan somewhere as well, didn't he?
Yeah, that name rings a bell.
Wasn't he Wolves? He spent most of his time alone at Fulham, Charlton and Barnsley, and then a brief spell at Arsenal Tula in 2015. There you go. So Graham Potter is on record saying he'd like to see a variation of this shirt in blue and white adopted for the next season, basically.
Is he
a
really?
A Nightmare on the case.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, of course he has. Although, actually, I would buy it.
But it's almost as bad as those 100 shirts for the cricket.
But you like skips. Oh, God. It's an interesting shirt. Now, before we move on to the next segment, we have to talk about Billy Arse, who's been, a Billy Arse. Are you all over this story?
The fact that he's been... Is it something to do with driving? Or something?
Yeah, he's been convicted. He's gone to prison.
That's right. Yeah. Well, okay.
And
yeah,
so that's going to do his work permit, but chances a lot of good.
Oh,
and,
right.
And he's currently in an Ecuadorian jail.
Oh, that one. Oh.
And it's an interesting one because obviously we've got all these players out on loan at the moment, and we've got when they come back next season, it's going to be crazy. I mean, the likes of Victor Gokhore is. He's doing really, really well at the moment. He's scoring some goals for... he's at St. Pauli.
St. Pauli,
And he's doing really, really well.
Well, we've become the Chelsea of...
Yeah, we have.
What do you think of Alexis McAllister? Do you think we'll ever actually get to see him?
No, I don't think we will.
I
think it's just a case of, we'll make money on him. There's no question. Mm. But I think we won't be seeing him in a Brighton shirt. Same as Percy Tau, like you're saying.
I think so.
You know, he's playing at the highest level. I mean, he's playing in the Champions League.
Well, yeah, exactly. And McAllister's in the Argentinian national team.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see him play for us. You never know, do you, I suppose, if they get the work permit situation. All this is post-Brexit stuff as well. We don't know what's going to happen with the immigration rules of the Premier League. They're saying they don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, if he gets a few caps for Argentina, that's how we got Esquerdo. Because he was, I think he had one or two caps for Colombia, but they could argue with the Home Office that, he's a full international. So,
tournament
player. You can get him a work permit, whereas, of course, with, we shall see.
Now, this is the beauty of live radio where we're not live. But recording it as live. I might as well tell you, I'm trying to call Andy Wing.
I wonder what you were doing there.
So we're going to keep talking.
He's in the pub.
But while I'm waiting for him to answer his phone. And there he is. There is Andrew Wing. He has answered the phone.
Hey.
And Andy, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, it's great to hear from you.
No problem.
Now, I mean, it's a lot's changed at your old club since you were here, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when I was last there, we were just surviving in sort of League One, and what an unbelievable change around and change of fortunes, which is obviously fantastic from the outside looking in.
Yeah, and now, when you came here, I mean, you were signed by Dean Wilkins in 2006, and it was initially on loan. Even then, the Falmer was looming over. Was it how was that as a player for you at the time? Thinking, okay, we've got these plans for this magnificent new stadium, but here, come and play in this athletic stadium.
I mean, to be fair, I didn't really focus on that at all. Really, it was just an opportunity for me to get some football under my belt. I was at Coventry City at the time. I was sort of in and out of the team. Coventry was obviously at the time all I've ever known, really. So one, it was a good experience for me to kind of move away from home and just concentrate on playing football. So that really wasn't a factor for me, really. It was just more go and get some games at a football club. And obviously, initially it was on loan. And obviously I enjoyed it that much. And, you know, I've done okay in that style. And unfortunately I was able to sign back for Brighton in the summer and on a 2-year contract.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know a lot about that. You're folklore in Coventry, because I mean, you scored the last ever goal at Highfield Road.
Yeah, I did. I weren't really one for or renowned for scoring goals or many goals anyway in my career, but that was quite a poignant one in sort of the history of the football club. Obviously, we're moving into a new stadium. Obviously, they've had their problems since that.
Yeah,
I mean, with the Rico Arena, but yeah, it was a special goal.
Yeah, what do you make of that stuff that's going on with there? Because it's a mess, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's not fair on the supporters. All the supporters are always the ones that sort of get let down with these kind of things, and you know, having to go. I know it's only it's 14, 15 miles down the road. You're playing at away ground, you don't feel like home. There's only 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 supporters going there, you know, when they get 14 upwards at the Rico. And yeah, it's obviously, you know, it's the fans are the ones to suffer. You know, on the pitch, they've actually done okay. I don't think they've lost a home game yet.
Yeah.
So, a so-called home
game. Yeah, they're doing okay, aren't they? But I mean,
it's the fans who suffer. It's not, you know, obviously the players have kind of got on with it, the manager, staff have all got on with it, but, you know, the fans are the ones who suffer at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, well, us here at Brighton, obviously, we know a lot about being an exile.
Absolutely,
so it's,
yeah.
Hopefully they can get back to Coventry soon. Now, okay, yeah. So it was Dean Wilkins that signed you. You made your debut in a 3-0 defeat that was completely memorable for not being memorable against Blackpool. It was a game where, that game was actually on the telly as well, and it wasn't a bad side. I mean, Guy Butter was there, Richard Carpenter was there, and some bloke called Sam Williams, who I completely forgotten about.
Yeah,
but you would have known about it because he came from Villa.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because obviously Coventry was in the Championship at the time, so we were in the middle of an international break. So I think I'd been running literally constantly at Coventry City for 3 or 4 days on the spin, and then I got the call to say, obviously Brighton were informed me to go on loan, and obviously accepted and went down there. So by the time that game come around, I was absolutely knackered, to be perfectly honest, and I was kind of thrown into it on TV. But you know, you just kind of got on with it, and it was kind of a rude awakening to start off with. And then because we lost 3-0, it was kind of we didn't play very well. I think Dean Wilkins made us run the next day. So yeah. I was even more knackered after that. I thought, well, this is what it's going to be like. But to be fair, it got a lot better from there. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed my time on loan. And, you know, that's why I went back. But, yeah, actually, funny enough, I stayed in a hotel with Sam Williams. He was on loan from, sort of the Villa under-23s, Villa reserve team. And I don't think he lasted too long, to be fair, what I can remember.
Three games, one goal.
Was it?
I looked him up. I did actually have to look him up. I had no idea who he was.
yeah.
But, I mean, what did you make of Dean Wilkins as a manager? Because, I mean, other players have come out and been quite critical.
I don't think I can ever be critical. One, he brought me to the football club that I really enjoyed. Two, I thought he was a fantastic coach. And on top of that, I thought he had really good managerial skills. If he thought that my standards were slipping within games, he didn't think I was playing well, he'd come and find you and ask why. Are there any reasons why? And I thought that was really good management, to be fair. And I think we're all quite shocked when I think we're on a sort of end of season sort of mini holiday at the time where we found out, you know, we finished seventh just outside the playoffs.
Yeah.
With a very, very young team, really, with a lot of local lads sort of kind of in that team, with a few experienced ones. We were quite shocked to, find out that, you know, he'd been sacked or let go and obviously Mickey Adams coming in.
Yeah, but I mean that was what Dean was trying to do. It was his dream to have put out a Brighton 11 of homegrown players.
Yeah.
You know what? He did really well trying to do that. I mean, not many of them went on to have that great a career, to be honest. But
yeah.
the likes of Dean Hammond, Dean Cox, they went on being successful. Tommy Elphick, he's still playing. And also, I mean, the next season, you know, I mean, some. You signed permanently that summer. Obviously, you went back to Coventry in the January and then came back in the August. And some new players had arrived. Most notably, Nicky Forster.
Yeah. I mean, Fozzie he's a great experienced pro and he was great in the dressing room alongside how good he was on the football pitch. If he scored a tap in training, he'd celebrate like he'd won the World Cup. That's what scoring goals meant to him. We all thought he was absolutely bonkers sometimes about the way he celebrated in training, like this sort of meaningless goals or whatever, but that enabled him, you know, that he loved that sort of that feeling of scoring goals, and that's why he was so successful. But on top of that, he was fantastic for the dressing room, and a lot, because we had a lot of young lads in that dressing room as well. We needed people like experienced pros like Fozzie in and around it to learn from and look up to, really.
Yeah. Baz Savage was also around there. Now, he was a bit of an enigma, wasn't he?
He certainly was, but again, he was, you know, we had some really good times in and around, you know, the dressing room. We had some really good results on the pitch. We had a really good sort of camaraderie off the pitch, really. Everyone was kind of buying into it. Everyone was kind of mates off the pitch, where you don't always find in some football clubs, there's always, you know, a few fractions here and there with different, you know, types of players. But at that time, you know, we had a fantastic dressing room, and, you know, players like Baz Savage and Nicky Forster and the younger ones and the experienced ones all sort of, you know, clicked together really well.
Did he teach you how to moonwalk?
Well, I watched him moonwalk, but I think
you loved it when he moonwalked, because you get a win bonus.
I don't think I'd have the rhythm like Baz Savage, to be fair. He was unbelievable.
Another player that was signed that season as well was a certain Mr. Glenn Murray. Are you surprised he's still playing? Not only is he still playing, but he's playing for the Albion still in the Premier League.
Again, Muzzer is an absolutely fantastic guy. A fantastic player. What he's achieved at Brighton, let alone anywhere else. Obviously. He's been fantastic from where he come from, obviously Carlisle kind of boy, and I think he done all right, but maybe struggled at first. He was a bit of an enigma in training sometimes, but he weren't the greatest trainer in the world. I bet he's 100 times better now, but back then he weren't, you know, someone that you'd look up to and thought, right, he's banging form. But then again, he kind of produced and scored goals on the football pitch when it mattered, and he's been a fantastic servant to Brighton, and he's a top guy as well.
Yeah, I mean, that midfield as well. It was the commentator's dream to have like a Dean Hammond and David Marto, and they're just like I say, ham and tomato. But it was. I'm not going to go into the one about like Savage and Rents and Cox and okay, Dick did pull the trigger and Mickey came back. With hindsight, do you reckon Mickey probably shouldn't have come back?
To be honest, I didn't really get on well with him at Coventry.
Really?
So for them, I got on really well with Dean Wilkins, who brought me into the football club. Mm. Obviously, Mickey Adams kind of let me go, didn't he, really, from Coventry to Brighton. So, you know, for me, it was kind of, here we go again kind of thing. You know, he's kind of got me out of the door at one club and he's followed me to another. So I wasn't really happy, obviously, with the appointment, especially with Dean Wilkins going. And I didn't really... I know I played quite a bit, but there was still kind of games where he took me off or he didn't play me in a game. He left me out of a game, and I didn't really enjoy that spell under Mickey Adams. That's just me personally.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, it didn't really sort of materialise. And then obviously he got let go sort of February time.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really work out. But there were some memorable games that season, though. I mean, there was a 3-2 win over Leicester where Bradley Johnson scored two pearlers.
Yeah.
Obviously, the cup win over Man City. What do you remember about that Man City game?
I thought we played really well that game. I know Man City were just... had just come into that bit of money, hadn't they? I mean, I think Rubinho didn't play, but they just signed Rubinho for 30-odd million. They had that Joe from Everton for 16.5 million. That's some experience. If you look back on there, like Vincent Kompany played, Richard Dunn played, Joe Hart played, Zabaleta played, Stephen Ireland played, Daniel Sturridge played. So they had a really, really good team. And we kind of had a really young team as well at the time. So it was a fantastic night. Fantastic night all round, obviously, to win on penalties. I think I come off just before we scored our second goal. So it was like 89th minute or something like that. I think Steve Cook come on, who plays in Bournemouth now. He came on for me to make his debut. And it was a fantastic evening all round, really. Yeah. Just what we probably needed at that time.
It was. I mean, obviously, you've retired now. I mean, it must be games like that that you look back on with a lot of fondness.
Oh, absolutely! And if you, as I've just named their names, it's when you, sometimes you don't realise at the time you don't realise what them players are going to go on to achieve, and to look back and say you played against them type of players, it's obviously, you know, it's a fantastic kind of, you know, thing to tell, you know, your kids or whatever in the future that I played against some of them players, and you know we managed to beat them. So it was a great night for the football club at the time. Yeah,
And actually, I mean, with Dean, obviously, you had its problems and its critics, but that, some of those nights there under the lights were just completely magical.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was a strange kind of atmosphere, strange kind of stadium, but we much prefer playing night games there than the sort of Saturday at 3 o'clock. There seemed to be sort of a better atmosphere, a kind of, I don't know, an eerie feeling around the place.
It was the trees. It was all about the trees.
Yeah, it was all about the trees and, you know, century stands and all that sort of stuff. So it was a little bit different kind of a night game. I think we enjoyed night games there more than anything, really.
Now, Russell Slade came in, and he's a man that you've got an awful lot of time for, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I'm working with him at the moment, but you know, back then we were kind of struggling and down and out, really. We really needed a lift. I think sometimes things got adrift. I couldn't tell you how many players we used that season. It was a ridiculous amount.
It was 44 players that season.
Yeah, I mean, which is way too many, isn't it? Well, it's probably 20 plus too many. But you know, we just didn't really get a rhythm going because of so many ins and outs and different managers bringing him and whoever else in, and we didn't really get an actual settled team. And luckily, you know, Russell Slade managed to get us a team that bought into how he wanted to play, and we kind of clicked.
Yeah.
And I think it clicks in kind of them games where we beat Yeovil 5-0.
Oh, that was tremendous.
I think 3-2, I think it was, or something like that. So there were games in there where, you know, we kind of clicked, and it gave us that momentum to kind of to stay up, because at one stage we are, even us as players thought we're really struggling here, but you know, we kind of pulled it together, and luckily we managed to stay up at the, you know, the last game of the season.
It was that season you got the player of the season as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, obviously one of the main I probably got that was because I played week in, week out. You know, everyone around me was kind of chopping and changing. We had load of injuries, loads of different combinations everywhere else, but I came to, I, you know, seemed to stick at it and probably I played 40 odd games where, you know, probably the next one was probably way down from that. So yeah. I think, for consistency more than anything, really.
I mean, there was one game particularly that season which really stands out. But Marcus, I think you were there as well, which was a game away at Milton
MK Dons. Yeah, yeah, I remember.
Where
it
basically,
yeah, we were 2-0 down. Yeah,
the Peter Ward song was changed to A Team Full of Andy Wings.
Oh.
Because basically it was a lacklustre performance from everyone that day.
Absolutely,
apart from you. And basically, you know, everyone to a man after going, like, Andy Wing, he's our man. Basically, look at him. He's bleeding for our badge here. And you know, is that sort of thing as supporters that you really, really appreciate, and then you take that with you.
Absolutely. I think sometimes you find characters, don't you, or you notice characters when you're kind of struggling a little bit. And we weren't going to get out of the situation just giving up, were we? So I think we had to sort of, find that kind of, inner strength, or just keep going, just keep trying your absolute hardest until, the curtains were drawn and we were relegated. But, the character I am, that I was never going to kind of let that happen.
Yeah.
So it was just a kind of, hopefully, if I start, putting in these performances, hopefully other players will follow. And in the end, everyone, we found a sort of team that clicked and, we managed to survive.
Okay, just before I move on, I just want to quickly talk about Gus. Now, obviously, Gus was your last Brighton manager.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't quite work out for you under him. But, I mean, what did you make of what he was trying to do at the club? I mean, because, he revolutionised the style of play for a League One side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, he's probably come in at probably the worst time for me because I just had 3 months out injured.
Yeah.
And I was... I think there was a suspension. I played one reserve game. I'd been out for over three months. Gus come in and I was kind of thrown into the team. Probably too early, maybe.
Yeah.
We played that Southampton game where, Crofty scored. I think Glenn Murray scored.
Twice.
And we won 3-1 away.
Yeah, wonderful game.
And I got through that game really on adrenaline, really. And then we had, I think, Norwich away on the Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that, from that game or the Wednesday night, whenever it was, that game probably come too early for me. But, the gaffer, I think, actually said to me, do you feel ready to play? And me being me, in hindsight, I wish I'd have said, no, actually, I maybe should rest this one. But, me being me said, yeah, I'm ready. I want to play. And it was probably way too early. And I played, we lost 4-1. Didn't have probably the best of games. I think I got dragged in the game. Because I was absolutely knackered from the game before because I wasn't properly fit. And then it rolled into the next game. I think we had Leeds. So we played Southampton, Norwich and Leeds in the space of a week. I could barely warm up before the Leeds game. I was that tired before. But again, adrenaline tried to get me through. Didn't have a great game. We lost 2-0. And that was kind of the end of me then, which... It was I felt a bit unfair because, I wasn't ready. I wasn't fit enough. And you kind of he's basing his performances on them 3 games where one of the top 3 teams in the division, who 2 of them got promoted, or probably 3 of them got promoted, I'm not too sure, in that season. And it was, it was a week of them 3 games. And I wasn't really ready for them, but I put myself out there because I wanted to impress. It was a new manager and I wanted to get back out playing. But it kind of killed me a little bit. And then that was the end for me, really.
Okay.
And obviously brought Calderon in, who obviously a cult hero at the club.
He was all right, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, I just felt, it was them 3 games kind of killed me a little bit when I wasn't really ready. And, the rest is history, really. I didn't really get back into it and I had to move elsewhere. But, Calderon came in and done fantastically well for the football club. So,
it
obviously for people looking from the outside, it was the right decision. But I just feel that it just kind of, I wasn't ready for them, for the new manager coming in, and I got thrust into it when I wasn't really ready.
Andy, we've got to move on. It's been very well documented that you might be a little bit of an Aston Villa fan.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we played you a couple of weeks ago in the League Cup. It was a useful exercise for us, but there is a school of thought that, I mean, obviously the side that you put out in that game was a very, very strong side, and maybe we could have put out a stronger side. We're going into, obviously we're coming to the international break. We've got Aston Villa away next weekend. Now, we've had a massive win last weekend. You had a massive win last weekend. Do you think the international break's maybe robbed you of a little bit of that momentum?
Yeah, maybe. Probably the same with Brighton as well. Yeah, it was two fantastic results. Obviously, the Brighton one at home for Tottenham was an unbelievable. I know Tottenham are struggling, but, you know, if you look at Tottenham's side, the side they put out was fantastic. And for young Connolly to get on the score sheet as well and play really well. So, you know, especially for players like him, he wants to keep going. He wants the next game to come quickly. So it's probably has kind of killed both sides, really, kind of killed that momentum a little bit. But I'm sure they'll, you know, when they get back into training next week, at the end of next week, I'm sure they'll sort of reiterate how well they played in both of them games. And it should be a really good game, really.
Yeah, no, Dean Smith's done a really good job at Villa. Obviously, he's a Villa fan as well. I take it the Villa fans have really taken to him for that as well. As a side coming up, obviously, we've been up here for 3 years now. I mean, it's been an up and down kind of season for you, but things are starting to click a little bit for you, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even to be fair, I thought we've played quite well pretty much every game this season, maybe bar one game. And I think we've been quite unlucky in some aspects in some games where we've had bad decisions on VAR and stuff like that has kind of gone against us a little bit, or we've had leads in games and we've thrown it away by sitting back too deep instead of, you know, trusting ourselves and having a bit more belief in our ability and doing what we've been doing really well to get into them sort of winning positions. Dean Smith, you know, he's kind of changed the philosophy a bit like Graham Potter has, from going from Steve Bruce to Dean Smith. You know, we've got a more attacking kind of style. You know, he's releasing sort of players like Greeley high up the pitch, and we're playing some really good football. And, you know, I think that kind
of... Let's hope that you're playing some really, really bad football next weekend. Yeah. And that you're kind of happy but kind of sad at the same time. You're at Hereford at the moment, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
I think Brighton's a swear word there still, isn't it?
Oh, right. Well, to be fair, I'm not too sure. Don't find out.
So I won't
mention Brighton then.
Okay, many thanks for that, Andy. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully you're celebrating a Brighton win next weekend.
All right,
top man. All right, cheers, Andy. Thanks, cheers, bye. That was, of course, Andy Wing there. what a lovely chap.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him wholehearted. Defender, that's why he got player of the season, as you say. There should be, I know there's no room for sentimentality in football, but I do remember that FA Cup game against Aston Villa, and I think he was on the bench and Gus didn't bring him on, and you just think, as a Villa fan, just throw him on for the last couple of years. I know they obviously Gus didn't rate him, as proved, because he was released at the end of the season, but we knew he was probably going to go, and just, I don't know, supported him since he's a lad, give him a couple of minutes. We were 3-0 down or 3-1 down at that point.
But Sam Williams, who is he?
I don't remember.
He played three games for us in that day.
Wow.
And he scored once.
Was he a striker?
He was kind of like a midfielder kind of striker. Yeah, he scored three appearances, one goal in a 2-1 home defeat to Chesterfield in 2006. He was on loan from Aston Villa.
Wow. Okay, right, that's why.
But subsequently, Marcus, I've asked you to... see if you can jog my memory and see if I can remember who the hell you're talking about.
Yeah.
We say that when we come on the show.
Yeah, I know we do. Yeah, try and find random players.
And regular listeners to this show will know I have no idea what I'm talking about. But it's, so go on, Marcus, enlighten me.
What you mean? Just name the player.
Okay, who've you come up with? To
We did exchange a couple of messages on this, but I am going to stick to my original thought. I'm going to go back to a couple that turned out for us in the Gillingham days. But there are players that people generally would have heard of, as opposed to there's a lot of players that sort of came and went through Gillingham and with Dean here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go for Ian Culverhouse as one of the defenders.
Oh, yeah. That's a quiz question. On
actually, is it what?
Yeah. There's a game they play called Culverhouse.
Oh, is there really?
Really?
Brilliant. Not only did he have a great song, but it was at that time when, he'd done all those years at Norwich, and I think he played in their sort of game against Bayern Munich or whatever.
Yeah.
He was in that sort of squad with, cool. I think it was Ullathorn, Culverhouse. Who was the guy he had up front, the Scottish, I can't remember, the Bring Gunning
Jeremy
goal.
Goss.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. You know, so it was all, and then I think he went to Swindon, then sort of drifted. And then we signed him. It's like, wow. Yeah, I think it's Brian Horton who signed him. Maybe I could be wrong. But yeah, so that's one of mine that you seem to forget.
Mark.
Well, similarly to Marcus, I remember trying to think of one that we would have known who he was, and then he ended up where we were, and it was Stephen Hendry.
Oh, bloody, yeah.
Do you remember?
Oh,
I mean, I remember him.
Yeah, Glenn Hoddle.
Yeah. Hey, very good.
But it was Lee Hendry.
Oh, it was Lee Hendry. There you go. See, I couldn't remember his first name. But that's what I barely remembered. There you go. All right, snookered there.
But Lee Hendry,
he comes on again, you know, in the England game. Hoddle plays him. He scampers around the pitch at Wembley looking born to it. And then, he's got some well-documented issues that happen to him. But, you know, he goes skidding down the leagues and then he turns up in an Albion shirt, you know.
Yeah. Okay, and what, one more for the collection?
One more for the collection. Okay, Gillingham Day, Jamie Morley was another one who was making big noises around the time. And I remember getting very excited that we signed Jamie Morley. I think he was doing well at Reading or somewhere like that. And all of a sudden, he turned up at Brighton at the Gillingham Days as well. And how the hell do we sign him?
I've got Thierry Racon.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I love Terry Racon and Dean Bowditch. But what team you got there?
I was going way back, actually. No one will remember this, maybe, because I'm a bit older than most people now. But John Ruggiero, when we signed Lawrenson and we signed Gary Williams, there were three great players we signed that summer. And Ruggiero was also
And he
up
looked
there.
Like his name.
And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and he got injured, I think, and that was the end of it. And we signed those three great players.
But unfortunately, Ruggiero, I'm going to have to interrupt you there, because I need to. We are running out of time. I need to talk to you about treason.
Hey.
Treason. Yes. Where is the treason show happening?
In Parliament, right now. No. The treason show is happening in Worthing at the cinema, the Dome Cinema in Worthing on Friday the 25th of October. We're doing Lewis on the Halloween. And on Friday the 1st of November, we're doing the Funky Fish Club.
Well, that's a new venue for you as well, isn't
it? Yeah, we're moving from the pier now. We're on the... And the Funky Fish Club has been done up, and it's just like the old Downstairs Comedian when we first started.
Really?
So the atmosphere is just... I nearly swore. It's so good. Anyway, and you can
How good?
Stay for the club. It's blimmin' marvellous.
Is it so good?
It's so great. Really, so really great. You're doing it bigly, folks.
so you've got that one. I mean, the Worthington, that's a new venue for you as
well. Yeah, it
is.
Yeah, we hope that'll work then. If it works in Worthing again, because we used to have a fan base there, we want to go back. And I love Worthing, so we want to go back.
It's coming up to 20 years doing it now.
Yep.
And how are you going to mark the 20th anniversary?
Well, I can't give away too much at the moment. We're in discussions about having a big bash about this, because 20 years, you know, is a record-breaking show. There's no narrative... Or this kind of show that's ever done this in Brighton. It's the first time it's ever happened.
Is there other things like it nationwide?
Because there's one in London that's been running longer, but it's very basic and room above a pub, which is very good. So I used to be the director of it. I did that in the 90s, but I was writing for Radio 4 in those days. And I'm just very delighted and chuffed that people are still coming to see the show. And the show's as strong as it's ever been at the moment.
Satirist like you, I mean, the current political climate, it's like manna from heaven for you.
It is, exactly. That's the phrase I'd use. And it's also therapy, because let's face it, the B word has driven us all nuts.
Don't say therapy, because I will think I'm closing the show with therapy.
You'll love it. But for me, obviously, I'm analysing it for material. So for me, I'm an addict. I love it. It's great, because it's material you couldn't make up. And actually, sometimes it's out-satirising life.
But that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you to the laddie himself and Hancox.
Stokely.
The second time I've done that gag, but obviously you played.
It didn't work
Tony
first
Hancock.
Time, matey.
Yeah, I have played the lad himself.
You know, my gags. I keep bagging them away, and they never work ever. But it's been a brilliant week. Thank you to Mark Brailsford and to Marcus Hancock
for having
AD Packham. It's been a wonderful week for Aaron Connolly, and I reckon right he's worth his weight in gold, right?
I could go where any man had tread. Put one finger on the other, send a bullet through his head if I go easy. Am I worth my weight in gold? You say you don't, but you're afraid to die. I've seen that look so many times, I see it right between your eyes. You go easy. Were you worth your weight in gold? Gone easy. Are you worth your weight in gold? Now I'll take the mountains and you take the seas. When no one is looking, take the sun just for me. Line up the rivers and gather all the mines. Then howl at the moon and watch the rivers as they rise. Said you weren't, but you were afraid to die. I saw that look so many times, I saw it right between your thighs. You'd gone easy. Were you worth your weight in gold? Shook the rattle from my burden, placed the snake around my neck. It was foregone, if not for certain, till I cut off my own legs. Had I gone easy? Was I worth my weight in gold? I'd gone easy. Was I worth my weight in gold? Now I'll take the mountains and you take the seas. When no one is looking, take the sun just for me. Line up the rivers and gather all the mines. Then howl at the moon and watch the rivers as they rise. As they rise.